Well, we're into into our Matthew series. We've been doing this for a good few weeks. I think this is the third to last, something like that. You can work the maths out. It ends on the Easter Sunday. And so we're approaching the end of the series in the book of Matthew entitled The King We Need. And obviously the king we need is Jesus. And we'll be into chapter 24 this morning. So if you have a Bible, if you can be finding that, that'd be great. Or on your phone. Phones, I broke mine on Friday. I've been going around telling everyone for years, I've never broken a phone. Now their pride creeps up on you and stitches you up. But anyway, let's get back to the text and what we're going to do this morning. So it's all about Jesus' return. And in case you wasn't aware, Jesus is going to return. He's coming back. And obviously, we've had a baby Thanksgiving this morning, which is wonderful. And there might be people in the room, you're here for the first time or you're just visiting in. And it's about Jesus' return. It's a big subject. And there's some challenging things in there for us. So I just wanted to give you some other things to think about before we get into the text. And Jesus was born of a virgin. He lived the perfect life. He never sinned, yet faced every temptation that you and I face. He then died a criminal's death as he bore our sin. He then rose from the grave, appeared to over 500 people over a six-week period. Quite amazing. And then he returned to heaven to be with his Father, sat down at the right hand of God. This is who we've come before this morning, who we're going to be speaking about this morning. And I wanted to mention that if you're unfamiliar with the story of Jesus. It's crucial that you get a glimpse of who Jesus is this morning, of who he is. And of course, for the rest of us here, it's a great reminder to who Jesus is, what he's done, his great love for us, expressed in his life and death and the resurrection. And the word of God is full of brilliant, brilliant promises. I will never leave you. The depth and width and height and breadth of the love of God poured out towards us. Encouraging truths. For God so loved the world that he sent his Son to die for you and me. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. We sung about that this morning. But this morning is a bit of a warning text. So I've given you all that, crammed in some amazing good news as we get into this warning text. But with every warning, there's an invitation from God. And that's what I love about the gospel. There's always an invitation. There's always a possibility, an opportunity to come to God, to come to him again, afresh, anew. So even if you're unfamiliar with the Bible, I'm sure you'll be interested in what the Bible tells us about Jesus' return. So before we read the passage in chapter 24, it's important to understand that for more than the first half of this chapter, which has quite a lot of verses, just a little warning there for you, it's about Jesus prophesying the destruction of the temple. And the latter part is foretelling the culmination of all things on the earth, the end of times. And so that's primarily from verse 36 onwards. And verse 34, sort of not in the middle, but sort of two-thirds of the way through, is a key verse that scholars' heads seem to explode over this verse as they try and fathom out. And it says this, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." And therefore, as we go along looking at these verses, they refer to the destruction of the temple. And they saw some, or thought about, are there any inconsistencies in this text? For that part of the verse where it says, "This generation will not pass away till all these things happen." And so, as I said, the scholars, these bright, clever people, have battled with this for centuries, decades, and stuff like that. And but for me, if I see an inconsistency or a perceived inconsistency in the Word of God, absolutely, I want to explore and find out, why is that? What does that mean? Have I misunderstood something? But then equally, after a period of time, and for you, you might be the same, that period of time might be very short or might be very long, I have to come to the conclusion, God is right. I am not. He is infinite. I am not. So as we read this, it's important to understand that the foretelling by Jesus regarding the temple also has implications for the end times, for the return of Jesus. The near event of the destruction of the temple serves as a symbol for the future event, an immediate and a future fulfillment. One sheds light on the other. So we're going to read from Matthew chapter 24, the first 35 verses. Here we go. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming, 'I am the Messiah,' and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you'll be handed over to the persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Messiah,' or 'There he is,' do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you in advance. So if anyone tells you, 'There he is out in the desert,' do not go out. Or 'Here he is in the inner rooms,' do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs become tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." Whew. We're through. That's three quarters of the sermon done, just reading that. So I don't know if the disciples misread the mood or the emotion. Chapter 23, obviously the one before, Jesus is really laying into the Pharisees and the teachers. "Woe to you, you've stopped others coming in." He's really put them straight, told them what's going on. And Jesus draws the attention towards the temple. And it's important to point out the value and significance of the temple. It was extravagant. It was laced with gold. It was a huge structure. If there was any building on the face of the earth that was deemed impregnable in the first century, it was the temple in Jerusalem. It was a place of strength. No one could conceive that such a magnificent building could be demolished to such an extent that no stone would be left one upon another. It was 150 feet tall. And Jesus said, not one stone will be laid upon another. It's all coming down. Everything will be thrown down. And this would have been shocking to the disciples. The temple was the pinnacle of Judaism. And it may be difficult for us to grasp the significance of the temple. I mean, Grace Church, we quite happily go from someone's living room to a village hall, to a school, to a warehouse, to an ambulance station. We probably don't grasp the significance, perhaps, of what it would mean for the Jewish people of that time. What can this all mean? Verse 2 and 3 says this. They ask a couple of questions. Do you see all things? He asked. Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. And as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? When will the temple be destroyed? What will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age? When is this going to happen? I mean, they'd learned a lot about Jesus. He's the person to go to. And they would be alarmed at the prospect of this temple come tumbling down. They want some inside information. Let us know, Jesus, when is this going to happen? What are the signs going to be? And these questions, coupled together, can easily lead us to thinking that Jesus is just talking about his return. But he is foretelling the destruction of the temple in AD 70. And this is a result of the failure of the people to follow him. It is a judgment upon the Jewish people. Jesus is letting them know, as we went through those verses, and we will go back over a few of them, he's letting them know it's going to be bad. It's going to be a very, very difficult time. Jesus answers the disciples, watch out, he says. He doesn't answer the when, but he does tell of some of the signs. False messiahs and prophets, false prophets are going to come. And Josephus, he was a Jewish person and he defected to the Roman side. And he's a historian and he documented numerous false messiahs. Other writings spoke of earthquakes. There were rumors and wars going on. And all this took place before AD 70 when the temple was destroyed. Nation against nation, famines occurred. There were huge fights in that time in the temple, in the surrounding areas. Huge fights over scraps of food. It was a desperate, desperate time. There were even occasions amongst themselves of cannibalism. That's how sad and desperate they were. Such was the desperate nature of their situation. And this took place over about a 4-year period until the complete overthrow and destruction of the temple. Literally, Jesus' words that I read out to you coming true in that period of time. Birth pains, you remember that? I mean, it's quite appropriate on a baby Thanksgiving morning to mention birth pains. Beginning signs, these terrible events foretold by Jesus. Something will be taking place. Jesus' words to the disciples and consequently to Christians following after. Watch out. Don't be alarmed, but be alert. I'm telling you this in advance. Jesus is telling the disciples and Christians following on, there's going to be some difficult times, very, very difficult times. But I'm telling you in advance and I'm telling you what to do when that time comes. He was forewarning them. And it goes on, persecution, betrayal of one another, more false prophets, increase in wickedness. And the Romans were at war with the people of Israel and it lasted 4 years, as I said. And there was evidence of all these things Jesus promised in those 4 years. Persecution, betrayal of one another, more false prophets, all of that. And Jesus said to them, as you've probably read this before, but as we read it, flee to the mountains, he said. Do it urgently. Take nothing with you. It will be desperate. He also said, pray. Don't panic. Stand firm. Be watchful and pray. And the historian Josephus says many did exactly that. They fled to the mountains. Most times when there's problems, you would flee towards the temple because that was a place of safety, impregnable place. And they fled. And it was reported by Josephus that not many Christians actually died. Interesting. They prayed and they obeyed the words of Jesus. They fled to the mountains. Praying and obeying Jesus. Sounds like a good plan to me. We could examine each of these verses one after the other. And if we had more time, we could do that and see all of what Jesus said came to pass. Just to pick on a couple of things. Firstly, in verse 14, it says this: "And the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." And this appears to be fulfilled in AD 70, because we can think preaching to the whole world, well, we know there's still people groups that have not been reached at this time. But he was talking about AD 70. Colossians 1, 5 and 6 says this: "The faith and love that has sprung from the hope stored up for you in heaven and about which you have already heard in the true message of the gospel that has come to you. In the same way, the gospel is bearing fruit and growing throughout the whole world, just as it's been doing amongst you since the day you heard it and truly understood God's grace." It reached the whole known world at that time. That's what Paul writes in Colossians, which was written in AD 62, before the temple is crushed and ruined. And perhaps a difficult verse, and I'm going to take it on. We'll see how we go. But it says this in 24 verse 15: "So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand." And, you know, when you have your quiet time, which you all do every morning, I know, and you open your Bible, Nicky Gumbel gets you to page whatever it is, Matthew 24, verse 15, and you've got 10 minutes before you've got to get out the door, get the kids to school, go to work. You don't really spend a lot of time dwelling on this, probably. How have you approached this in the past? Perhaps, like me, certainly, for some years, well, I don't understand it. Let's move on to the next verse, the next page. But Jesus is looking back to an event spoken of by the prophet Daniel, an Old Testament prophet. It says, "Let the reader understand." He's talking to his disciples. "You know about this. Take it in." And Jesus is picking on this event. You know, Jesus is picking on this event that Daniel, the Old Testament prophet, foretold, which took place years later, the abomination of desolation. And that's an event whereby a person came into the temple and did a terrible sacrilegious thing. And that happened in Daniel's time. There was a guy called Titus. I'm sure that's not pronounced correctly, but anyway, that's what I'm calling him at the minute. He came into the temple and set himself up as a god and did terrible things. He desecrated the temple and he even sacrificed pigs in the Jewish temple. A terrible thing for the Jewish people, obviously. And what Jesus is saying, this is going to happen again. And it did in that time, in those 4-year period. Through Roman rulers coming in, they made images of themselves. They made Roman standards with on the top of the poles, images that are very ungodly. And they made it a pagan place. And this was accentuated by Jewish zealots who'd really thought they were fighting for Jesus, but they got the plot all wrong. They caused devastation, a misplaced desire for power, to the point that prostitution took place in the temple. Havoc and pain was the outcome, just as Jesus had said it would. I'm just making the point that all these verses point to AD 70 and the destruction of the temple. And you might think, well, we could go to a proper historian then rather hear that from me. But it's more than that. Don't forget what I said earlier. It's important to understand the foretelling of Jesus regarding the temple. But it has implications for the end times, for when Jesus comes back. The near event of the temple, of its destruction, serves as a symbol for a future event. An immediate and a future fulfillment. One sheds light on the other. A picture of something far bigger and far greater to come, the return of Jesus. I'll drop back on a couple of the prophetic words that apply to both the temple and Jesus in a little while. But let's read the verses that apply to Jesus' return, which is really the best bit. I mean, I'm not a historian, and that is all important to understand. But Jesus' return, this is so exciting. And if you're a Christian, you should be very excited about that. And if you're not, here's an opportunity. Let's read almost the rest of Matthew chapter 26, verses 36 to 44. It says this: "But about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in a field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this: if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let this house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." No one knows about that day, what day it's going to be. No one knows. That's what Jesus said. In his humanity, Jesus said, "I don't know the time." The disciples asked, "When?" "I don't know," Jesus said. For centuries, groups and individuals have said, "I know when Jesus is coming back. I know it's the return." I would say this, just based not on what I say, but on what the Bible says: take no notice of them. Here's the thing. If someone says, "I know when Jesus is returning," don't believe it, because you know they're a false prophet, because it says so right in this word. And they say the time, all they do is they prove that they're false. And in the past and today, people read the Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other and join them together and conclude, "I think I know when the time is coming, in a particular time." And in the 90s, there was a thing called the Bible Code that people said, through dates and different passages in the Old Testament and current events, we know when it's going to happen. We've worked it all out. There are others who have drawn mathematical equations from Old Testament stories, Old Testament books, worked out, we know when it's going to happen. Jesus has made it very, very clear: I don't know, and nor do you. And if someone comes saying they do know, they are a false prophet. So it's very clear. In 1920, anyone a part of the Panacea Society here? I didn't think so. I didn't look to that side of the room, but I know the answer. And they said in 1920, Jesus is returning, and it will be in Bedford. I mean, that is laughable, right? Bedford. Anyway, don't move to Bedford. 1920's come and gone, and Jesus hasn't returned yet. But sometimes we can listen to other stuff, a bit more subtle. False prophets say about all what's going on in the world today, perhaps the Middle East. This is a sign. Yes, there are birth pains, absolutely. But it doesn't tell us when Jesus is returning. Don't get caught up in stuff like that. Jesus is returning and we don't know when. But there are signs, but we don't know when. There was a guy called David Icke. Anyone old enough to remember that name? Good. Well, there's four of us. Well done. Well, this was a guy, right, who played football for Coventry City. We won't hold that against him. But anyway, he also said he was the Messiah. He was deluded. I was going to say something worse, but he was properly deluded, this guy. You know, this sort of stuff was being said, and people, apparently over 100 people came to his house and were demanding to see the Messiah. People get caught up and trapped in stuff like that. Don't be like that. You know, the stuff that goes on in the world today, you know, political stuff. I'm not a political type of person. You may have realized that. But if you are, don't get caught up to the extent where this shapes what you think of when Jesus is going to return. We don't know. Of course, there are signs, wars, rumors of wars, famine, lawlessness. These are all signs, birth pains. But these signs have been in existence throughout a lot of history. So just don't go there about when the time is. Don't go there and don't go after people that say they do know. Leave them to their own devices. Birth pains are a reminder to a pregnant woman. Something is going on. Birth pains, obviously I'm speaking secondhand here, right? So anyone in the room you know, please, that's my little, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, birth pains, as I'm told, get worse before they get better. There are troubles in this world, famines, wars, and the like. Let it be a reminder to us, like these birth pains, which I said I don't fully get, but let it be a reminder that Jesus is going to return. A woman goes through a lengthy, excruciating period of pain, early onset of sickness, tiredness, pain, increased pain. But I would say they wouldn't swap the outcome for anything else when they see that baby. Jesus is coming again. There are birth pains. There are things going on. Sometimes there's trouble, but Jesus is returning. And it says he will suddenly come. Birth pains, yes, but there's still an unexpected part of it. Noah did what God commanded. He built the ark. All around him are thinking, what are you doing? But all of a sudden, at a moment in time, the floods came. As long as that's not me, I don't mind. That was not an alarm for Jesus coming back, just so you know. All of a sudden, at any time, the floods came. Run-of-the-mill stuff is going on. You know, it was talked about two at a mill, two working in a field. People are getting married. People are overindulging in drink and stuff like that. Normal stuff. And then suddenly God came. The floods came. All of a sudden. Jesus here is talking about judgment. Be ready. I said earlier this is a warning text. And there's a consequence to our sin and our separation from God. The wages of sin is death. It will be a fearful day when Jesus returns or when you die, if you're not right with God through his death and resurrection. But there's an invitation. Today you can be right before God. You can have your relation put right with him through Jesus. And so I would urge anyone, if you are in this room and you don't know Jesus or you're unsure, you can receive the forgiveness of God today. Your life can be totally changed through repentance and faith in Jesus. And it will be the most glorious thing ever when Jesus returns or when you meet him face to face. The invitation is there from Jesus. Don't be like the people of Noah's day and completely miss it, just going about the daily work. But just also in that going about the daily work, that's what we're to do. If you're a Christian, Jesus is returning, but we still do the stuff, the day-to-day stuff. That's what he's called us to. Jesus is telling his disciples, he's telling us, it will be business as usual, and then bang, he's here. And how will this happen? Well, let's be clear, all will see. This will be a cosmic, worldwide, massive event. He's coming for those who belong to him. He's coming for those who he's purchased with his blood. This will not be a small thing. This will be the biggest, most dramatic event ever in the whole of history. The shepherd coming for his sheep, personal but visible to the whole universe. Verse 27 says, for as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For those that know Jesus, it will be indescribable joy. It will be immeasurable. It will be awesome. And that word gets bandied about a lot, doesn't it? And it will be awesome like we can't explain. Breathtaking. The groom has come for his bride, and the bride says, come. If you meet with God at his coming, or you die before, and that you're his, you will not care about a bucket list. Don't worry about that sort of stuff, or your career, or the things you think you might deserve, or the family that you did or didn't have, or any suffering or persecution. What a day that's going to be when Jesus returns or when you meet him face to face. And verse 14 says this, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. The gospel will go to all nations, meaning every tribe and every tongue, and therefore you and I have a part to play. We have the best message ever, full stop. a message of salvation, of citizenship of heaven. We sung from the bottom of our hearts this morning, I'm a child of God. That's the message we've got to tell other people. To offer the opportunity to become children of God. In your street, school gate, workplace, sports club, wherever you go, we have a message that transforms hearts. That they might look forward to this day too. This speaks of every tribe and every tongue. And maybe you feel a sense of a call to the nations. Short term, long term, but you feel that sense. A mission exists because worship doesn't. That's what it's all about. And one of the great joys of being a Christian is being involved with someone's salvation. It's a wonderful joy to look on and see a person come to Christ, and God has used you to at least observe that. What a joy. We heard a few weeks back from Adam Watson. Most of you would have heard it. And he really, for me, and maybe for you too, put back on the agenda world mission. Gave me a bigger perspective. It gave me a bigger vision of who God is, more in line with God's vision, God's story, God's big story. And then Jesus says, keep watch. Jesus points out the suddenly because he wants us to be ready to keep watch. Verse 42, therefore, keep watch. Don't be alarmed. Stand firm. Don't let your love run cold, even in the midst of suffering and persecution. Jesus is answering a different question to the one the disciples asked. He answers that there will be the sign of your coming and points to the numerous signs so they don't miss it. But he doesn't answer the when. We've covered that. But he does answer a question that they didn't even ask, but it's so important. How can we be ready for his return or our death? Verse 12 and 13 says, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. We live in a time of peace, really, don't we, in comparison to many. And we can become complacent. Yeah, I'm a Christian, I'm here, aren't I? But Jesus returning, oh, that's way down the road. We don't know that. Maybe you don't think about it much. I'm going to urge you to think about the return of Jesus. Don't let your love run cold. I can't tell you how many times I get a cup of tea, and over a little period of time, I forgot about it and it grows cold. It weren't immediate, you know, someone's made me a cup of tea. I've even made my own tea sometimes and left it. That's how bad I am at this sort of thing. But over a period of time, it's gone from hot to cold. Don't get complacent. Don't let your love for Jesus start to drift away to a place where it is cold. If we're distracted, if we get complacent by other, distracted by other things, even good things, when trouble comes, we can find out that our love has run a little cold. It's become a bit tepid. Indicators for that can be, I've become a bit cynical. Get annoyed at change. Being with the family of God feels, it's a bit of a duty. Jesus is saying to us, stand firm, endure. And how do we do that? Well, it's not a case, if you're British, of stiff upper lip or even rugged determination or to train yourself to be more fight than flight. It's none of those things. We stand firm and endure when we fix our gaze upon Jesus. The more times we can say, he is my all in all, the better. In our watchfulness, be expectant. It's not like, you know, you're on a night duty as a security guard and you're just looking at the CCTV with half an eye on it, hoping nothing happens, get a bit of sleep. If anyone's a security guard here, that wasn't pointed at you, by the way. But we're to be looking intently, looking with the gaze of a lover for a glimpse of the one they love. That's the intensity that we should be looking towards Jesus. We're to have a stance of ongoing preparedness, of constant readiness. We know he's coming. We've felt the birth pains, and we keep on living day after day for him, being filled with the Holy Spirit, being the best work colleague, mother, brother, sister, father. In other words, my life reflecting more and more of Jesus day after day. That's my readiness for when he comes back. I'm looking for him. I'm waiting for him. Doing what Jesus commands by faith. Just as Noah built that ark and everyone looking around, you are crazy. And then suddenly, the more we know Jesus, the more we will truly look forward to his coming. And I think there's a bit of a measure there. To meet with him, commune with him, have fellowship with the King of Kings. Even on our average days, we go to Jesus. Read his word, have specific times, pray at all times. Are you looking forward to meeting with Jesus? Stay awake. Don't get sleepy. Don't fall into a spiritual stupor. If you are in some sort of spiritual maze or just sleepwalking spiritually, there is no time like today to stir yourself to say, Jesus, I'm coming running back to you. Respond to Jesus this morning. Be real with the one who can change things, can change your heart. I want us to finish. If the band could come back up, that would be great. Thank you. I want us to finish with Jesus' words. He says, don't be alarmed. Because if real distress and persecution comes our way, and Jesus has said that's going to happen, it's possible to ask ourselves, and maybe you've done that when you've seen other people go through very distressing moments, and you've asked yourself this question, how will I ever cope? How will I deal with it? I think God would remind us, his grace is sufficient for you. His grace is sufficient for me in every circumstance, in every situation. He will never leave you or forsake you. He is faithful. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. I want us to respond in worship. Can we stand, please, if you're able to? Let's enjoy worshiping the King we need. That's been the title over this series. And the King we need is Jesus. He's coming again. If you feel like you've gone a bit cold, well, come and renew your love again. He welcomes that. If you're not yet a Christian, run to Jesus today. Tell him, I want to know you, Jesus. Forgive me. I'm sorry for where I've messed up and for my sin. And for the rest of us, ask Jesus to keep you, to protect you, to pour his love into your life. Let's stir our hearts. Let's worship him. Let our response be in our worship to Jesus.